Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
Before I do my intro,
okay.
Can you hear me, Amy? Hi, Amy, are you there?
Yeah.
She's here! Amy.
Oh, my God, I'm sorry.
All right, well, no, it's all right. I like to always do a nice big intro, so let me do that now. Ladies and gentlemen, from Evanescence, it's Amy.
Hey! Hi, guys. Nice intro.
How are you?
Good. Thanks
Excellent.
For having me.
Oh, are you kidding me? It's great. Listen, we had just played Better Without You. Leading right into this, and of course, it's on the album The Bitter Truth, which is finally
yeah.
out. And I wanted to ask you about that because you were talking about this album. I mean, was it done already, like in 2019? I mean, in the can and ready to go, or close to it?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay,
we really wrote most of it last year. Yeah,
okay.
During everything.
All right, then I had read that you had. You wanted people to hear it at that point, so I read something incorrect. Oddly enough, there was some misinformation that I found on the web.
Weird.
Yeah.
Well, we started it a while back. You know, we'd been working in bits and pieces through 2019 in between tours. We just sort of started putting time aside when we were all together. We live all over the world, all over the country, and now we have a member who lives in Germany, Jen, who we've been away from since before the pandemic. She's been with us remotely on this thing since the first four songs, but we made it happen. We
yeah.
really did.
It's such a
man. Hallelujah.
No, it's very cool. And honestly, the entire world has gone through a maelstrom of stuff, you know, obviously with the COVID and all that stuff. And then you guys have also, all of you at some level, been dealing with personal crises. And, you know, here you are at this end of it, releasing music into the world, connecting with people and what you love doing. Is there just a big sigh of, it, you know, relief now that it's out there? I can't imagine what that process is like and what you're currently experiencing.
It feels so good.
Yeah.
It really does. And for us, you know, it's not something we do every other year. It's something that is, you know, it comes out when it happens, when the inspiration hits and the time is right and everything lines up and we know what we want to do. So more than ever, it feels like a very special occasion for us. And you know, like you said, having so much to get off of our chest personally and just feeling connected, you know, with the rest of the world in this time of the last couple of years, just strain and loss and frustration. It feels so good to be in a rock band.
Yeah.
Pour all that out into the music. I can't tell you how good it feels. And now, you know, I'm such a, I don't know, detail critic, always hearing all the little things I want to chip away and change, to finally have it done and not be listening to that anymore and just to listen in my car and enjoy it. It feels really, really good.
Okay. I wanted to ask about that in particular. So, and I would imagine all artists, musicians, maybe not all, but some go through this where you have this final product, you're very proud of it. It, you know, it's sat for a little while. It's sunken in. Do you go back and go, man, I wish we would have done that. I wish I would have added this harmony. I wish I would have tweaked this and that. Are you okay or is that just natural?
That hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
I don't think that about the new stuff. It's funny. I'm hearing so many little things when there's still the chance to change it. I'm hearing this and that and this, and I don't know, and maybe this and one more of this, and we need more backer vocals and all that. But then once it's done, finally stepping away, I'm like, I don't even remember all the details I was honing in on anymore. It just sounds great.
Yeah. You know what? And that's why I would be a lousy, producer or anything in that position, because you constantly want to be changing and tweaking and doing this and that. You had Nick, Rasculette is your producer, one of the best rock guy that there is to it. And,
yes.
And does he, tell me about your working with him and what that experience is like.
He's the best. He's incredible. And that's part of what makes that happen. He's very much in on the details like I am. We work really well together. We don't always have the exact same idea. It's good to have somebody who has different ideas and goes, hey, you know, maybe you should try this one other thing. But really, it's so good to have somebody that you really trust who can say, you know, when you're like, what's better, A or B? Like this take or that one? Or like for me to go up here or go down here? Somebody who's just like a good sounding board of like, dude, it sounds great when you do it when you go up. Let's go for that.
That's, you know? You got to have that. All right. I also wanted to ask, you know, Steve had mentioned the fact that there's a lot of there's a lot of message you're getting across with this music. There's a lot of things happening. You mentioned a lot of tragedy. There's some good things too, but I wanted to ask you on a personal note. When I will sometimes listen to songs for years and have no idea what the artist was trying to, the message that they were trying to get through right. in this song. Now, I may love the melody and the harmonies and the rhythm and all that stuff, and I like the song, but don't really know what it's about.
Sure.
How do you feel about that? When you've poured emotion, when you've poured, you've written these lyrics, you're getting across a very specific theme that you want, and people don't get it. Is that okay?
It's totally okay.
Okay.
Honestly, I write in a way that is very cathartic for me. And in some of these songs, I hear what I'm saying, and I'm like, there's no way anybody can hear this other than exactly what I mean. But there is. And something that's really beautiful about art and music is when people can take it and apply it to their own life or their own particular personal experience, what they're going through, and let it be that for them. I think that's a beautiful thing. And it's funny because I want to break down and explain as much as I can about our lyrics, kind of, but there's another part of me that doesn't, because it's sort of better when you see what it turns into for somebody else. It's kind of more powerful that way. I've had songs that totally moved me, and I didn't know that they were about something for many, many years. I was like, oh, that's what that was about?
Yeah.
But therein lies the beauty of the subjective nature of music. But there's something, and I wonder if you agree with this, and I think it might in some way speak to why vinyl has become more popular again. Having album cover art and having an artist, I used to use, when I would listen to music and listen to an album, an actual record, I would look at the art, and a lot of times you had additional messages being conveyed through that.
Yes.
Is that something you remember fondly? And yeah, that's a cool thing, right? We don't have that anymore,
yes.
Really. Yeah, yeah.
That's always, yeah, we do. I do that.
Yeah, I know you do. Yeah.
Because I feel like that's what's so cool is you can have so many, there are so many different ways to express yourself and to make an image kind of have a deeper impact. That's why music videos are so cool. Dude, we actually just filmed our Better Without You video. It's going to be so cool. In Minneapolis, actually, we road tripped it. I drove 13 hours in a car with Troy and my girl, Beth.
Wow.
It was really fun. Got cheese curds and everything. Anyway, when you can take, you know, something and go, okay, here's a visual also that sort of feels like the world that this is living in. I don't know. That is a huge part of it, whether it's album artwork or whatever.
Yeah.
And we do that. We almost always have some sort of like animal or insect or something that's like our secret spirit animal that goes with the music for each era. This one's a nautilus. And to me, that spiral shape has always been like some kind of a symbol of like eternity, you know, like it keeps going until you can't see it anymore. And
right.
It makes me think about the future and the past and the soul and like the depths of things. So it just fits. And it's like, it doesn't have to be that anybody really knows that explanation, but it feels that way to me. Mm. So maybe it'll feel like that to somebody else on a subconscious level.
Cool. Amy Lee, I was actually having a discussion over the weekend and your name was brought up, as well as Taylor Momsen, Lizzie Hale and Dorothy. And it was because we were watching the pregame for the NCAA Final Four, and they had a giant Miley Cyrus concert. Now, so I don't want to knock Miley Cyrus at all, but she was, you know, for the masses, the female representation of rock music. And I listened to her album, and I like
it. He likes her a lot.
I do. And so that's what I'm saying. I'm not knocking Miley, but I was like,
right.
I was a little bit perplexed on why they're having her represent rock and roll when she is not classically known as a rock artist. And I thought, man, Amy Lee would have been perfect for this. Lizzie Hale would have been perfect. Taylor Momsen, Dorothy. Yeah. There had so many, you know, other, I thought, better representations of rock music. And I wasn't sure what your thoughts were on her being a rock act now. And I'm not asking you to knock anything either.
Yeah, and again, without knocking her with you, I'm with you on that. I feel like it has to do with the people in place that are putting those kind of productions together. They need to hire you guys. They need if there's a place where, you know, rock music is going to be represented. There's so much rock music with millions of fans. Like, rock is no way dead. Like,
right.
It is full alive. But we need people in the positions of power and placement to recognize and tap into that rock world instead of always trying to make it, well, what'll just get the most people, you know, that have heard this name before or whatever to care about it. That just feels a little bit like a business move, a corporate move.
That's exactly
it. Get the numbers. Well, yeah. That's always frustrating. It's cool to be the underdog, but
right.
at the same time, it's like, well, rock is real. You know, there are people out there that like it. Give it a chance for sure.
Yeah, but my wife did bring up the point that she is, you know, she's a different name out there, and so it maybe she is going to be that entree, right? Maybe somebody's going to watch her, listen to her, and go, well, hang on a second. I like this style of music. And maybe somebody
take a deeper dive.
Maybe somebody who wouldn't have known about Evanescence is now all of a sudden introduced as a result of that. I was like, okay, well, that's a healthy perspective, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and Casey brought up the, you know, the great female rockers that are out there now, and I always kind of think of you as you, for me and for us, I think here represented the turn where we were like, you know, we had obviously legendary voices in rock, but you represented this next wave that I think is still going on. And you were the flashpoint, I think. And it seems like your contemporaries, and I've read interviews with all of them where they cite you as that step off point that has to come with a bit of pride.
That's really cool. It's, you know, it's so much cooler doing all of this now, later on in life, with the experience and the respect that comes along with, you know, just doing it for a long time and surviving so much.
Yeah.
It's I would way rather be where I am now than what it felt like when we were starting out.
Yes. Yeah.
It's badass. It's incredible. You know, there are so many people that came before me, you know, that have influenced me. So many rad women. It's not like I'm like this one pillar of rock. There have been women in rock from the beginning.
Yeah, but you had a style which I kind of see as almost like dominatrix-esque. And let me explain, because they incorporate pleasure and pain.
Yeah.
And right. so the instrumentation is the pain and your voice is the pleasure. You have this smoothness about you, and then there's that raw edge of the music that
operatic.
Go together. So, I mean, you know,
contrast.
Yeah.
Contrast. So, you know, on a visual, audio, whatever level, I like to hear two really different things coming together to make that beautiful swirl.
And and as I want to be the first one who has ever called you a dominatrix. Has anybody ever done that?
Oh, you're not the first.
We're on Zoom with Amy, so we can see her in the
yes.
room that she's in. Are those Care Bears and Smurf dolls behind you?
Yeah. What's your pleasure?
Do you have any My Little Ponies? Because Kathy was never allowed to have a My Little Pony when she was a kid.
Yeah. Wait.
We're going to take a look. She's taking the camera over. I'll describe to the audience.
Oh my
yes!
God,
oh, my little ponies! Several My Little Ponies.
I try to keep it in perspective so, like, the Grammys and the awards have,
right.
like,
yeah.
dolls all around.
It's like in front of a gold record and a Grammy, there's a My Little Pony. Several.
Wait, and I love the caravan.
My Little Pony climbing the Grammy right now.
Oh, the Raggedy Ann up there.
Amy, I used to go to my neighbor's house and play with the neighbor because she had My Little Ponies. And for whatever reason, and it wasn't that I wasn't allowed to have them, but my mom never got them for me, and I was traumatized as a kid.
Your
really
mom probably thought
them.
They were sinful or something.
That's really funny. Right. I honestly, like, I didn't have that many toys as a kid, but there was, I don't know why, like, there's so many cool 80s collectible. I mean, it's not like it's only the 80s. It happened later too with Pokemon and Beanie Babies and everything else, but like, when I got to be a teenager and all that stuff was like at flea markets and cheap, I was like, I'm buying every toy that I ever wanted now.
Yeah, now that you can afford it, go for it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, Amy, with the new record and new music, what are your thoughts on touring and what it's going to be like over the next few months? Because so much of that is up in the air for so many different acts.
Yeah, we're not going to be out there this summer, but we are making plans for the end of the year. And I just can't wait.
God.
It's been just this thing where we keep making plans. And this is like with tour and everything else over the last year and a half, almost now. You just keep making plans and keep having to push them back. And then you just keep making them again and keep you know, waiting for that time when you don't have to postpone it again. So we just keep making plans.
Yeah.
And I feel like now, you know, we're in a different situation than when we were in last year when we just kept pushing it back, hoping for something. Now there's a vaccine. Now things are changing. I've already gotten my first shot. We're headed towards the end of not being able to do it anymore. So we are going to unleash the fury. I am so ready to get out there and just play and feel what it feels like to be on stage, just immersed fully in music with a group of hot and sweaty people. Don't you want that so bad?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah. Yes. As a matter of fact, I mean, when was the last time you played our MMRBQ? How many years? Obviously, it wasn't last year. Was that was that 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2019. Ago.
Yeah, because I had a great memory of being in the commissary, if you will. And I believe they might have been serving kielbasa sausage. And I started singing Tenacious D.
Tenacious D.
You were there. And you actually sang with me a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your butt
that.
Cheeks is warm.
Yes.
That was our road trip music. That we were just on that road trip. It was all Tenacious D.
That's awesome.
All of it.
I'm an
old school fan from like the cable days.
Yeah,
like
the HBO show.
They played the MMRBQ 1 year, and they were it was the festival.
Yeah.
It's a festival, another festival that we did, and nobody really knew them except the musicians. And it was wild to see that. The audience was like, what in the F?
Before Jack Black was a household name, man.
Every band was lined up stageside, and they were like freaking out. It was just hilarious.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny because it's one of those things, right? Like Spinal Tap, where bands get it on a level where it, especially with the Tenacious D, their musicianship is so good.
Yeah.
That's part of what makes it so funny. Like all the details of like talking about writing a song and everything, you just relate to it. Yeah. That's right. And it actually sounds great.
It does. They're really great. And Pick of Destiny is just, you can watch that over and over again. I wanted to ask you, when you're performing, getting back to the concert dynamic, what's the better scenario? You're able to roll out the music and a lot of your listeners have heard it. They're live, perform live with that energy, or they come already pre-schooled on the music because they've been listening to it over and over again off of the album.
You know, it's cool when they know it a little bit. That one of the cool things about this situation is we're going to be going out there playing the new album.
Right.
And by the time we're able to be up on stage playing it, the fans have been living it with it for a year.
Right.
I mean, we started releasing the songs, you know, already a year ago now. So it won't be that, ooh, what's this one? I haven't heard it before. I mean, it'll be cool to hear it live, but they'll know the words. And I think that's going to be really powerful.
Yeah. I remember when I would be going to a concert, I would take a little bit of time to do the work, to get the album and listen to it and then go. It's a completely different experience. And were you the same way when you were pre-rock star? Yeah.
Yeah. Even now, like if we're going to go to a show, and it's a band that like a friend wants to go to that I don't really know that well, or I know like the hits, but I don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
Like you always jam that album that day when you're like getting ready to go, just so you're kind of familiar with what's going to happen. It makes it more exciting when the songs you like do happen.
It serves you better as you're paying for this ticket.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get more out of it if you listen to the material. I remember Rush had done a tour and it was a concept album that they had. And they said they were going to mainly just be playing music from that. So I did my work. I listened to it. I loved it. Our boss did not listen to it.
Yeah.
He thought it was a lousy concert. I thought it was an awesome concert.
Yeah.
So that can be the difference. You got to listen to the material.
I totally agree.
Hey, I wanted to ask because Taylor Momsen's name came up. Lizzie Hale's name came up. There are a couple of the featured backup singers on this album. There are several people that you brought on board and... But all of this done remotely. How is that? I mean, just a quick phone call and they're in type of thing?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It wasn't completely remote. That was when we were recording Use My Voice. It was right before the shutdown. It was the beginning of last year. So we recorded in Nashville. That's where Nick's studio is. And Lizzie, and they live here. So it was easy for her to come by, like check out the song, get in the booth. And Dina Jacob from Viridia, my friend who helped me actually write a little bit of the song. She could come in. She lives here. So we did that. But also I just like texted and called a couple friends and was like, I don't know, you want to lay a vocal down on this? And everybody said yes. And
awesome. Really
cool. You guys all have your own style and all shine in your own ways. But when you're watching Lizzie, do you kind of sit there and go, a little less?
No,
don't destroy me on this. Gosh, her voice is so
Lizzie
powerful.
I'm like, turn that girl up.
That's so cool that you guys all live out there. That's just one of those cities that I need to get to.
Well, are you in Nashville?
Yeah, I am now. Wow. I was in Brooklyn for 13 years. It's weird. It's different, but it's good. We're closer to my parents here.
Hey, I wanted to listen. I don't know if you have the details, and if you do, if you're allowed to give them out or not, but you are going to be announcing a streaming concert next month. Can you talk about that right now or no?
I don't know. I haven't talked about it yet because I didn't think I was supposed to, but you just spilled beans.
Feel free to get in trouble of us. Yeah,
nobody's listening.
We are. We're working on it. We're just now talking about the set list. So we are doing something. Yes.
Okay. I've watched a lot of streaming concerts over the last year, and it is, I mean, there's some really, really great things. I'm a huge Phish fan. And Trey Anastasio did a run of shows at the Beacon. And what they did, which I thought was really, really cool, is they performed towards the back of the stage, right? And so and then they lit up all the seats behind them. I mean, just are you talking like, you know, just visuals alone? Because obviously the music's going to, you know, speak for itself. But the visuals alone, I thought that was a really cool visual.
That is really cool. That's a good idea.
Hey, what's
now, we still have to figure out what we're going to do exactly.
When you're putting the set list together, what's most important, opener or closer to you? What do you think?
That is a difficult question.
Yeah.
The opener is really important. I'm tempted to say the closer, but honestly, like the way you start the show really sets up the whole energy of the night. If you come in strong, like that is going to just get everybody to buy into everything else you're about to do. So I think starting is really important, but ending's important too, because whatever you end with, that's what's going to be in everybody's head for the rest of the night.
I saw a Cheap Trick one time and they opened with I Want You to Want Me.
Yes.
And we were like,
what?
And I still remember that to this day. I mean, that blew me away.
There's a lot behind those moves, I think. That's a statement. It's like, if you guys came to just hear this one song, you can leave now.
The rest
of the show is for the fans. You guys want to go to the bathroom? Just go. Yeah. Go to the back. This is for the fans now. That's what that says to me.
We had a show one time, and we won't mention the band, but the band opened and closed with their hit at the time. It was a weird thing.
Well, it was the New Radicals, they really didn't have much material.
Pretty much what they had.
And that's a great song. You get what you get.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
But, hey, I wanted to... And I don't know if we've talked to you since you guys released your cover of The Chain, but what an amazing rendition of that song. And I just wanted to thank you for doing that, choosing to do that and releasing it. Yeah.
And ballsy too.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
that's a bold shot at a song that's got its own identity for sure. It was awesome.
Totally, man. It felt really good to do. Our band is made up of people. We all have a little bit of a different taste in music, and we all like different things. And, you know, some of that contrast between us is what makes it great. But one place that we all super agree is Fleetwood Mac. So to be able to go in and for us all to just be like, yes, like equally excited to have the opportunity to do it was really cool. And my thought on covers is always find a new way, like make it somehow like really your own, because if it's really just going to be another version of the original, like that's just, I don't know. I want to go hear the original then. Like, that's
reminding people of a version they like better. Yeah. Which is, that's the problem.
Like,
yeah.
Bring a new perspective to the table and see if you can show, you know, another potential interpretation of the music. So I that song definitely, you know, it's different. It's very different from the original. I really like it.
You mentioned each band member having their own taste, and then confirm or deny, is your number one pie choice these days pecan pie? And how did that happen?
You guys researched deep. Far on Instagram.
Can you confirm or deny?
Confirm. I love pecan pie. I mean, I like food in general. I'm a food person, but Yeah, I think that was like last Thanksgiving or something. I was like, okay, I'm making a mark in time. Like, this is my favorite. I'm tired of playing around. This isn't a joke anymore.
So you pronounce it pecan pie, which is how I say it as well. Steve says pecan.
Yeah.
So then where are you from? Where did you grow up that you got that pronunciation?
I actually grew up all over. My dad's was in radio for 30 years, so we're kind of a no-dialect family. South Florida is where I grew up as a small child, but then Illinois and then Arkansas. But, I mean, I've lived everywhere, kind of.
All right, what did he do in radio?
But pecan. We say pecan.
Pecan.
What did he do in radio?
He did what you do. He was a DJ, a program director, morning show.
Oh.
We traveled. That's why we moved around a lot, you know, just different jobs.
Wow, cool. Excellent. Well, listen, we're excited about the prospect of maybe, you know, a streaming show coming up, and obviously you doing the live stuff, which is going to be fantastic, and the new album is great. So, Amy Lee, congratulations to you, the rest of the guys in the band.
Thank you.
And just keep doing what you're doing, and we love it, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. Can't wait to see you in person again.
Yes. Excellent.
The Bitter Truth, Amy Lee, Evanescence. Thank you very much. And thanks for coming on this morning. So,
wow.
She's so cool.
She's awesome.
I love it. We do need to take a break.
We don't?
What am I talking about?
Why are you lying?
No.
Do we need to take a break? Yeah. We will take a break.
Okay.
We'll come back in a moment, and we'll get to, because we normally don't break till like,
what did you just do?
He just hit his leg.
He just banged his knee.
Is that what I felt to the console?
Yeah. His chair is up higher than it normally is.
Oh, man.
And underneath the console.
I felt it over here. Kate.
I did.
Underneath the console is this shelf for his keyboard. Oh. And he just.
You all right?
I'm okay now.
So we don't take a break.
No, we are going to
take a break. Okay, we are going
to. Because we got to get some ice on his knees. Yeah, so we'll take a break. We'll come back in a second.
Want more Preston and Steve? Get the whole show podcast or Bizarre Files at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.